Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. I'm broadcasting to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada, and my guest, Mr. Stephen Joseph, we're talking to him in California, and we are going through studios in Northern California. Talk about fabulous technology. It is exciting to live in today's world that makes this possible. We have a fabulous topic to talk about today. It is leadership ability. That is the title of the book that we're going to be discussing today, Five Levels of Mastery for Anticipating and Initiating Change. Again, my guest is Stephen Joseph. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
I am so delighted to have you as a guest. I know Mr. Bill Joyner also worked on this book, Leadership
Yes.
Agility, and I want my audience to know the background of both of you. Bill Joyner is a world-renowned, well, both of you are world-renowned consultants and executive coaches, and you've had clients that have been from Aetna, Corning, Dell, EMC, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, MIT, Sun Microsystems, Sunoco, and Travelers, and so many more. You are partners in a leadership and organizational development firm called ChangeWise. You are located in Boston and San Francisco. Bill Joyner is an adjunct faculty member at the Winston Center for Leadership and Ethics at Boston College and received his doctorate from Harvard University. You, Stephen, are a master coach with degrees from the University of Massachusetts, Harvard University, Antioch College, and Clark University. You guys have been busy.
Yeah, definitely busy.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Why is it that the two of you together decided you wanted to empower people to really work with the ethics of leadership and to show them the various stages that they go through? What was it from both your side as well as Bill Joyner's side, Stephen, that said, we really want to educate people on this? What pushed your buttons?
Well, I think it's just our experience with leaders in general, and when you pick up the paper in the morning, there are leaders who are in charge of making decisions about huge amounts of resource, whether it's human resources, financial resources, environmental resources, community resources. They really affect people's lives. And if they could be much more conscious and wise, I think the world would be a better place, and that's really what drives us.
You make a statement right in your introduction that less than 10% of managers have mastered the level of agility needed for sustained success in today's turbulent business environment. Today's business world is not just turbulent, but it is such a challenge because, for example, with women, there's been a growth like 51% in the area of self-employment, women forming businesses. There is this whole new environment that has been developed for them where a lot of things with women that they didn't have to do. And then men also, the good old boy system of what I call the antique set, this is no longer in place. It doesn't work. We cannot operate with a 1930s, a 1940s mentality, and yet it is promoted and taught still. And this is something that I found in your book, Leadership Agility, that you wanted to get past. Now, how was it that you and Bill were able to compile enough information? How long did it take you to get the details and the comprehensive summation together that you do in the book, Leadership Ability?
It took us 4 years to write the book and do the research, but even before that, you know, there have been decades of research that have been done about stage development. You know, it used to be that psychologists thought that when you got to be a young adult or 21 years old, that that was really the end of your psychological maturity. And we know that that's really not the case, that people continue to develop on and on. But here's the thing. That development doesn't automatically come with age. You could be at, say, the first stage in our book called the expert. You could be an expert when you're 20, and you could be an expert when you're 70. So it's up to the person to develop.
Yes, it is. And you talk about the stages of development. You also feel that leadership development is from the outside in and from the inside out. And I couldn't agree with you more. And it's an ongoing process. In my observation and also personal experience, when you stop learning, you're dead in the water.
I agree.
Because this world of ours, and it's always been that way. It really has been, I think. But that hasn't been the attitude that has been out there. Let's talk about stages of personal development.
Okay.
And you have what you call the three conventional stages, the conformer, the expert, and the achiever. Touch on each of those a little bit.
Well, the conformer is somebody who really feels like their sense of self, you know, the feeling worthwhile or even feeling secure is based on just being able to connect with the social group. So conforming feels comfortable to them. But when you get to the expert stage, which is the next one, you really want to differentiate yourself from the crowd somehow, and that's by knowing something special. So if you ask an expert leader what makes a good leader, they'll say it's somebody who's admired and respected for their knowledge and expertise. And then you get to the achiever, which is the next stage up, and they've got some more abilities. They can think out strategically. They can think a couple of years out instead of, you know, down the road only 6 months or so like an expert. They're very persuasive, but when they're listening to somebody else, they're what you might say, reloading. They're not really listening. They're just picking up little tidbits so that they could persuade the other person when they talk.
That is such a significant statement. Now, you talk about competencies and capacities.
Right.
Define competencies as most people would define it, and then give your definition of what it really should be.
Well, I think when people talk about competencies, I think they just think about, you know, what's usually required. And sometimes there are our best practices, you know, that a leader might do. You know, how do you delegate something? How do you lead a meeting? How do you give a presentation? How do you make decisions? Those are all the competencies that we talk about in the book, and our definition is a little bit more expanded. When it comes to the capacities, those are the kind of, what I would say, the internal qualities that someone has, the ability to role reverse, say, with somebody else and make it meaningful, the ability, just that quality of empathy. And also, as people progress through the stages beyond achiever, they're not so sure anymore that they're absolutely right, and so they become more curious and less ego-driven, more interested in listening to somebody else than they are in just telling somebody else the way it ought to be.
There are so many instances in history that is demonstrated so well. In your book, Leadership Ability, you have 22 different stories, and I would like to focus on one of the first in your book about Robert, who was an executive in a Canadian oil corporation. This man accomplished some phenomenal things, but he really had to do a turnaround himself at a certain time within his own company.
Mm-hmm.
Tell his story.
Well, the thing about Robert, I think, is that he was preceded in this oil company by an achiever. And the oil company was in a mature market, you know, so the achiever leader came in and he did what most leaders do. You know, they try to cut costs in order to raise profitability, but it just didn't work. So what happened was he had to lay people off, and it created this tremendous climate of fear. When Robert came in, he had desires to take the company not just to be profitable, but he wanted it to be, you know, the stellar company that was used as a benchmark by everybody else for not only what a good oil company was, but what a great company was. And so he started by listening to other people. And he listened to all his employees about ways that they could save costs, about ways that they could improve their productivity, about, you know, hundreds and hundreds of things. And he also had hired world-class consultants. But the idea was he didn't feel like he had to come up with all the answers. That's the important thing. And he was curious and interested enough to use the ideas from all these other people. So it feels, when you're working for a catalyst like Robert, which is a stage beyond achiever, it feels when you're working for a guy like that, like it's great to come to work, like you're really listened to. And, you know, it's kind of like, boy, do I get paid for this? Get paid for coming up with ideas and being able to implement them and make a difference? You know, it just feels wonderful.
That is so true. And I can draw upon two experiences that I had very strong association with a few years back, and one was a smaller company and one was a major company.
Mm-hmm.
And the big, big kahuna that had thousands and thousands of employees,
yeah,
someone had been wise enough with this super colossal company to really encourage employees to come up with ideas. They said, look, this is what we need to do. They'd have these meetings with their employees and say, these are our challenges. I'm going to toss it out to you. Come back with some ideas, and you'll get a bonus, you know, of X, Y, Z if you do it. And I knew a guy that was making thousands of dollars extra a year because he was doing that. He just had fun. He was a person that never wanted to be one of the executives, but he was just an idea guy. And he, along with a number of others, and this company just rolled. And then when the management shifted, when a particular crew of people that had been at the top, they retired and new ones came in, that went away. And what went away, then the company started going down the tubes. They started going in reverse in their thinking. They didn't look at what had really been working. A smaller company that had been run sort of in, hi, I'm the big daddy, by the president of the company,
yeah,
my family, and that worked well until it got to a certain point of growth and development where it was really expanding.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there was a younger man that came in. The older father image was highly loved and respected by all the employees, but his stuff wasn't working anymore. He didn't have the thinking process. This younger man came in, and he was given the opportunity to shift things. They started having major, major problems. And then what happened is he called all the employees together in a meeting and said, look, we're going down the toilet. This is what we have to do. And not unlike what you talked about, Robert, where he was sharing, he laid everything out for all the employees to see. And what happened is just what you said. The morale turned around and they said, you mean you're interested in what we have to say? So a lot of complaints came out, but then he'd say, okay, we've got these complaints, but guys, I'm one person. This is where we are. This is a critical mass situation here. We don't want to lay anybody off. We don't want to do stuff. What are we going to do? And by golly, the innovation that came out of it, and that company, the last time I was involved with them, was just thriving, absolutely thriving. And they had regular meetings with their employees, and it was just, it was marvelous. So when I read Robert's story, and I read so many of the other things in your book, which we'll touch on, those two examples that I witnessed personally, I thought, my goodness, that's the way it needs to be done. We need to understand these different levels.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, especially in rapidly changing business conditions because you can't run it from the top down that way.
No, you can't. Now, expert, achiever, heroic and post-heroic leadership.
Yep.
You also have the catalyst, which you've mentioned, the co-creator level, the synergistic level. We've touched a little bit on the expert level and a touch on the achiever. Let's talk about the heroic and post-heroic leadership.
Well, you know, the reason that we call it that, we got this, borrowed this term from Bradford and Cohen, who wrote a book called Power Up. And basically, heroic leaders are the ones that think that they are the prime movers. You know, without them, nothing happens. And if you, I notice you do coaching, Donna. If you ever get somebody, you know, in front of you who's a heroic leader, what you'll hear from them is, doesn't anybody around here care? You know, am I the only one? And you know, they're just dead tired because they feel like they have to make it happen all by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you get past that and you realize that the whole group knows a lot more than anybody can singly, and you start to push the decision-making down in the organization, then things really start to happen.
Yes, they do.
And that's why that person is called the catalyst. If you go a little further, you know, the synergist is, I should say these percentages, the experts account for about 45% of the managers that you'll meet, and 35% are achievers, and there's even 10% below the expert. So there's only 10% left after that. And at the very top end, 1% of the people you meet are synergists. And these are the kind of people that I imagine your listeners can relate to, just from what I've seen of your show, that there's a story about a synergist who was a venture capitalist, and he used to listen to people tell them their problems. These people were running companies that he was funding. And he described this process where he would say that he almost slowed down his molecules. That's the way it felt to him. And he would just listen from a very, very still place. And as he listened to the problem, it felt like he took it on himself as though it was resident in his body. And then after a little while, he would come up with a solution, but he wouldn't say anything. He just let it drop. And then he'd listen for a while more, and he'd come with another solution, and then he'd just let that one drop. And then a third one would come, and then maybe at some point he described being flooded with light as though from above. And when he was in that place and filled with joy, it's at that moment that he started a conversation about solutions. If you contrast that with someone who just tells you what to do,
mm-hmm.
It's quite different.
It is very different. And in my observation and also experience, often the synergist is someone that people will look at and they'll say, excuse me, what planet are you on? Don't you get it? We're having scrambled eggs and bacon this morning.
Right.
Have you got it? This is it. Scrambled eggs. You say, well, you know, you can have them poached. You can have them fried. You can even microwave them. You can broil them. What other options do we have?
Yeah.
And he drives everybody nuts.
Well, you know, what the real interesting thing is that the synergist has gone through being an expert, being an achiever, being a catalyst, and being a co-creator. And that person has the skills, all the competencies of all those stages. But they have infinite more capacity in how they apply them. So they don't have to be, you know, a space cadet where the rubber meets the sky type person.
Mm-hmm.
They still can be where the rubber meets the road. It's just that they know about the sky, and a lot of people don't.
Stephen, you have an example, a story, and I've got your book in front of me, about a man that had turned around a company. The company got into a particular level of difficulty, and he was able to get it past that. He just did wonderfully, and then after that, he started going backwards. And it had to do with an HMO, I believe, a company.
Yes.
And would you share that story? Because to me, that was such a profound story about someone that had done such a wonderful job but needed to shift thinking after he had accomplished something particular. Tell us that story.
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of stories like this, Donna, where, for instance, somebody at the achiever level, achievers are, you know, I've been talking about their, you know, their limitations. But actually, achievers have quite a lot of good qualities, and they can be very, very successful.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're not at that next kind of post-heroic level, what happens to them is they don't necessarily make the connections with the stakeholders that they need to do, and they don't see strategically far enough out to be able to be sure-footed in the kind of changes, and you can get caught by surprise you know, in that way. And in this particular story, he was caught because he didn't anticipate a certain change in the marketplace, and he was left kind of flat-footed. But when he was there, he did a great job.
Yes, he did. That's what he did.
Yep.
And, of course, he went on to someplace else in another positioning. But I thought it was very poignant because we must be aware that things may change in technology. They can change, you know, for various reasons. Sometimes you have to restructure an environment. And for those of you listening, the book Leadership Agility, what I find valuable about this book is that can it be applied in many different levels of life. If you're a teacher, if you're someone that's in business, if you're thinking of going into business, if you're a college student, it makes you aware of different types of thinking, and it empowers you as an individual to be able to recognize perhaps some of your own strengths, some of your own weaknesses, and it'll put you in a positioning of perception that maybe you wouldn't have had otherwise. So it's a book to add to your library that's really great. I loved one story that you had in here where there was a retreat done by a gentleman by the name of Mark with his management team, and part of the retreat, it was a highlight of it, where 15-minute debates that took place in one afternoon meeting.
Uh-huh.
Five groups of eight were formed, and they were told to prepare for a debate, but with a twist. The subgroups that were in favor of the strategy idea that had been presented were to debate against it, and the subgroups with reservations were to debate for it. And it was absolutely awesome, the result.
Yeah.
By switching thinking positionings. I shared it with my husband. I said, this is just absolutely incredibly wonderful because it makes you change your mind's paradigm. And first everybody was surprised, and it worked so well because they discovered the strengths and the weaknesses.
Yes.
I just think it was great.
Well, you know, I like those kind of stories too, because when we teach somebody, for instance, to prepare for a very difficult conversation or a difficult negotiation, what we do is we have them pretend they're the other person, and you just kind of interview that other person for a while. You ask them what they care about. You ask them what keeps them up at night. You ask them what kinds of assumptions that they're bringing to the meeting and what they expect. And then once that person is able to reverse into the other person's role and develop that kind of empathy, then often the negotiation goes a lot better, not just because of the information that you got, but because you've been in that other person's shoes. And,
mm-hmm.
and you can start out the negotiation by saying, you know, in thinking about this meeting and thinking about it from your point of view, I was thinking, you know, that you would want the following things. And, I agree with you. I think a good solution would have to include those elements. And the other person is often stunned. You know, they just say, wow, I didn't know anybody was thinking, you know, I thought you were just going to come in here and take some kind of posture, and we were going to have to just play tug of war for
mm-hmm.
a couple of days, you know.
Right.
But you can get right through it, just like that.
It's just amazing. And that's what I feel is so good about your book, because I think you bring different paradigms into positioning that allow us to, if we're not familiar with certain roles of thought, and let's face it, we're all programmed on one level or another as
mm-hmm.
we grow up in life, and I don't care whether we're 3 years old or we're 103. We're all carrying around stuff in our head that we have adopted, and to be able to shift out of what is no longer valid, that's a real challenge because we're going to have so many around us that are going to say, what are you doing? It doesn't make sense. You're going to say, I do it because it's the right thing for me to do. And if you do a good example of it, then they're going to say, hey, what you're doing is working. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I want to pay attention.
Yeah.
And that is an ongoing process.
You know, this it's interesting about people's relationship to power and what their power style is. And, you know, some of your listeners may want to go to the website leadershipagility.com, and there's a power style assessment that you can take on there for free.
Ooh.
And what it does is it tells you how you relate to a situation where power really comes into play. And, you know, do you back off? Are you very accommodative, or are you overly assertive, or do you have a nice balance between them and can shift back and forth? that's the ideal style. But you can tell what your style is by going on there, and then we'll give you some advice about what to do.
Okay, mention that website one more time.
LeadershipAgility.com.
LeadershipAgility.com. Hey, you can go and take the test, folks. Go ahead and do it. Now, I want to close with a story about Joyce. I thought this was so special. This is a woman that you described as a catalyst, and she was working very, very late one night, and she was so stressed out because she had work above and beyond. It's like the image that you see in cartoons where the work is piled up over her head. She was so stressed. She was close to tears, and she was working real late, and her janitor comes by and pokes his nose into her office. And he said, "Don't you ever listen to Enya." And you said, "Yeah, I listened." And this is some kind of a music deal. And she said she just loved him. He was just such a nice guy. And he said, "I think you should listen to her music, Joyce. I think you should get a stereo in here. It would change the energy in the room." This is coming from the janitor.
Right.
And he then says, "Come with me for a minute." And he walked outside the building with her onto a little knoll, and he looked at the facilities that surrounded them, and he said, "This is your community, Joyce. All the people who work here day and night. The people here trust you. They believe in you. They know you're working really hard to make this place the best it can be. So don't be so hard on yourself. You've already changed this place so much, you have no idea the power of the love that you brought to this community. They love you for it in return. That's more important than anything else in the world. You've got to remember that, Joyce. It's all about people. It's all about caring for each other. That's what's changing this place. You've got to believe in yourself because the rest of us do." She said, "The janitor said this to me." Such a gift.
Really?
Well, I know, Stephen, we are out of time. Your website is leadershipability.com. My guest has been Stephen Josephs. Leadership Agility is the name of the book. It is something you have in your library. Yes, Stephen?
I was going to say it's leadershipagility.com.
Yes, that's the website. You get the free test, too.
You
find out how you can handle power. This is great. Thank you so much, Stephen. When you get your next book out, be sure and let me know.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thanks, Donna.
It's a delight. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget leadershipagility.com. Go there and take the test. Buy the book, Five Levels of Mastery for Anticipating and Initiating Change. A must read. Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and I know we've got a caller on the line waiting, but before we get to that caller, I want to give out the toll-free numbers where you can call in and chat with me. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight, give me a call at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, the toll-free number is 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And by the way, for those of you in Alaska, for those of you in New York, and for those of you in Southern California, I am appearing in all of those areas. Now, obviously, there will be select places where I will be. If you want more information, go to my website. The information will be on the calendar. And if you're in Anchorage or Fairbanks, Alaska, and if you're going to be in New York City, or if you're going to be in Southern California area and you'd like to be in touch with me so that perhaps we could have a private meeting, that's fine. Call my office at 800-872-8852. So, again, this lady is going to be on the road for the next month. I'm delighted to be able to interact and meet with so many of you. There's just so many wonderful things occurring. And I'll be telling you later on in the hour about the guests that are going to be coming up here on the Donna Sebo Show. Meanwhile, we want to get to our caller who's been on the line waiting so patiently. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
My first name is Elaine. I'm calling from Wayne, New Jersey.
From Wayne, New Jersey. Wonderful. Just across the way from New York a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, dear. First thing that I'm looking at is you need to think first before you speak, and you are going to need to be aware of your emotions, and you must put them in proper perspective and not allow your emotions to overwhelm common sense. And what's going on with this is that I'm seeing a conversation, and to me it feels as if it's family. And it's as if there are individuals, and I'm using the plural for a reason, there are individuals that feel very protective about you on one hand, and on the other hand, they are wanting to be very controlling, and they're coming from a positioning of fear. So if you're not careful, you're going to be stuck with a feeling on your own part of guilt, which is ridiculous, there shouldn't be any there. And you will feel like, well, maybe they know more than I do. You are developing a level of trust in yourself. You don't have to explain anything away. You're not going to be able to change these other people. So go about the business of taking care of you, changing yourself. You do that where they may have been very critical at one point. They're going to be patting you on the back. Also, you need to take care of yourself physically. You have not been paying attention to your own wellness, and you're not feeling very good. You feel depleted. You feel drained. You need to take care of yourself, and don't go on any kind of a ridiculous dietary program. You need to use good common sense. You don't have to go on any kind of extreme. You don't need to beat yourself up. You need to appreciate who you are and recognize that you're the one that's going through the transition. The other people can't. That's not part of their journey. This is your journey. So be true to yourself, hon, and don't be afraid of not having other people's approval. Be it with integrity with yourself, and you're just going to absolutely move forward with such a speed. It's phenomenal. You're not stuck. Do you have a question for me?
Yes, my mother passed on, and I feel guilty because I couldn't prevent it, or if I took it to the doctor, or.
Now, why do you think you need to do that?
To prevent her passing.
You couldn't have prevented her passing. She was ready to go. There's nothing you could have done, Elaine. When you have something like this that affects you and you miss this person a great deal, it is going to happen to every single person on this planet at one time or another. What you'll be really having to deal with is the fact that you have a mortality too, just like I have a mortality. So it's living your life with a level of quality. And your mother's life didn't have all that much quality to it. You were able to do what you were able to do, but she made her own choices.
Is she happy now? Is she okay?
Yes, she's fine, Elaine.
Does she know I'm still grieving?
Yes, but why are you wanting to continue to grieve?
So I miss her so much, you never get over it.
Yes, you can get over it. In fact, instead of the grief, but it's a process. And each of us will have to go through a process. But you need to ask yourself why you continue to feel like this is what you must do. Because this is not what your mother would want you to do.
I want to stay connected with her. I mean, can she hear me when I talk with her and everything?
You can talk with her as much as you want.
She can hear me?
Of course. Love is always there. Even when somebody passes on, dear, love doesn't disappear. You don't stop loving someone just because they've passed on. But the best gift you could give is to live your life and to be in joy with who you are and to be the finest representative of who you are so that you could say, hey, Mom, look at what I was able to achieve. You always wanted me to do certain things. Here I am. Look at what I'm doing. I've gone to school. This is it. So if you want, if it is something that touches your heart and touches your mind, write your mom letters. Write letters to her. When people pass on, they know, they are aware. Love is something that has no limitations to it, and it reaches out even to those on the other side.
And can I have your website?
Sure. It's DelphiInternational.com. D-E-L-P-H-I, like the Delphi Oracle. Then the word international.com.
DelphiInternational.com.
That's right.
Okay, and was there a title of a book that your guest gave?
Yes, it's Leadership Agility. Leadership Agility. And you can go into the website, leadershipagility.com, and there is a test that you can take in there.
LeadershipAgility.com.
Mm-hmm. And the authors are Bill Joyner and Stephen Josephs.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call, Elaine.
Okay, thank you. I enjoyed speaking with you. And does my mother have any messages for me?
Not on. Just live your life with quality. Live your life with purpose. That's the best gift you could give her.
And these people that you said are trying to control me, are these close to me? Are they family or who are they?
Yes, they feel like family to me. They feel like family. I'm going to have to go, Elaine.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, dear.
Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to chat with me, here are the toll-free numbers, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. Also, I want to let you know about who's going to be on the air with me tomorrow. It's Nancy Mills. We're going to be talking about a big subject today. It's the boomers. Yes, those people that are part of the boomers generation. Wow, they make such a difference economically, philosophically, and on so many other levels. So Nancy has a lot of insights for that. And then next week, we've got a wonderful lineup of guests. Lone Wolf in the Company of Fools and Mystics. Provocative title, don't you think? Well, you're going to find out more on Monday. And then if you're one of those people that loves technology, we're going to have Joe Huber. He has published a book called Ask Mr. Technology. And we're going to discuss some of the common issues that people have to deal with when they're getting into the world of computers, etc. Also, we're going to be talking with Ralph Roberts about how to protect ourselves from mortgage fraud. Yes, it's something we do need to pay attention to. Then we've got Dr. McInall. We're going to be talking about his fascinating book, Postmortem, Solving History's Great medical mysteries. It's going to involve a lot of fascinating stuff. And then Carol Quinley, who's one of the hosts on BBS Radio, we're going to be talking about her HeartLink Institute, also about her crop circle cards, which I think you'll find quite interesting. Great lineup next week, and I invite you and your friends to join us. And if you're a first-time listener, I'm so delighted you've been able to join the listening family here at bbsradio.com, the Donna Sebo Show. Remember, if you miss a show, you can always go to our archives, and you can listen to the archives at your leisure, so you don't have to miss any of the wonderful guests, the wonderful interviews that you have. Again, if you want to call in and chat with me, 877-876-5227, Canadians, 888-810-8322. Now, I know we're going to be going to break in just a little bit here, so I wanted to continue with something I had started earlier in the week, and it was about how to decipher nature's secret messages. If you were listening to the show the other day, I was telling you about a friend of mine who absolutely believes that whenever she sees a dragonfly, something significant is going to happen. And it's amazing how that occurs. Well, here are some of the other images in nature. A cardinal. Now, cardinals are very well known on the East Coast, and they're gloriously gorgeous birds, are beautiful red. And whenever cardinals come into your space, they're a representation of a nudge to express your creative energies. And since the male and female share equally in parenting their young, they also suggest that a project will go better with a partner. So if you see one and you're looking at something, it may be just a signal of, remember, you don't need to go it alone. Someone may join in and help you have it come. Butterflies. Oh, my goodness. I've had such special experiences with butterflies. And for me, when I see them, they just absolutely uplift me. And there's so many different types, and especially the monarch is so beautiful. But when you see a butterfly, most people in many cultures will say when you see them, it makes you feel like a positive change is coming. Why? Because the butterfly goes through its own metamorphosis from being a caterpillar into this beautiful, exquisite creature. And change is always part of life. And it usually can be, dependent on how we plan and dependent on how we think, a stepping stone to better things. So if your routine has been holding you back, spotting a butterfly may mean it's time to bring you into a position to shake your life up a little bit and be willing to spread your wings into a new arena. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go away. We've got more good things to share. Don't forget you can call in if you'd like to chat. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, Canadians, 888-810-8322, and I wanted to share some thoughts with you. Business is a part of our life on one level or another, and sometimes we get ideas, we become aware of a way that we can create a solution to a problem that may be you have, or maybe you observe other people having. So what do you do? What do you do? What if you want to turn an idea into money? Well, there's some very good steps that you can take, and it's going to mean you're going to have to do some homework. So let's go through a few steps so that you can just have an idea. If you have an invention or you're aware of something, and you've checked around and you go, I don't see this on the shelf. well, depending on where you live, you may or may not be aware that someone else is to have the same idea. Believe me, universal mind shoots out its information to anybody and everybody, and it doesn't make a big deal of difference unless you really take the time to research and if you decide to get a patent. First, you need to find out if anyone has claim to the idea that you've got. Now, you can do a quick Google or Yahoo search, and you can go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And you can also check out gadget sites like SkyMall, Brookstone, and Hamaker Schemmler to see if they have anything similar. So it's a good idea to check. And the patent office can often give you some good information there, too. And then you're going to need to do some research on whether or not what you consider a great idea is going to be something that's worth doing. Because you're going to need to find out who's going to buy it and use it. How much is it going to cost to make it? How much should you charge? And you can do an informal focus group on playgrounds, in malls, in stores, wherever you feel that your idea might fit. That's very important. And I know we've got a caller in the line. So I'm just going to leave you with those 2 points, and then I've got a couple more. So I'll share those with you after this caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is E from Tacoma.
Hi, E. And from Tacoma, is it storming there?
Oh, I haven't looked out lately. No, it's sunny.
Well, I'm here in Las Vegas where the sun is shining. It's 80 degrees.
Oh.
And we were told, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ruin your day, but I know it was just pouring when I left home. You know, being in the Pacific Northwest, we feel like we have webbed feet after a while. So,
how nice. You went to the sunshine.
Oh, it's wonderful being here. I'll tell you what. I might even have to put on sunscreen. It's just so sad. Okay, let's get down to business, E. The first thing I'm looking at with you is keep your pace. You must keep your pace. And the reason I say you must is that if you try to push too quickly towards your objective, it's sort of like going on a diet that we think maybe if we starve ourselves, we're going to get to our destination a lot more quickly. And then we find it doesn't work because all of a sudden we're eating 5 tons of chocolate cake, you know, with fudge frosting on it. We go, oh, gee whiz, it's not working. But anyway, I'm being a little facetious there. But what I want to say to you is you have objectives. And you have been doing a nice job of not putting yourself under unnecessary pressure. But for some reason, you're getting a little antsy. And you're saying, maybe I should push a little bit harder. Maybe I should work harder. And I want to say, no, you're doing fine. Just take your time. It's okay. You're not in a race with anyone but yourself. And that's what you need to remember. There's no race here other than the one you're making. You're doing fine. You're going to accomplish what you want to accomplish, but it'll be the right way for you. So being prudent, being attentive, paying attention to detail, these are things you're doing. You're doing a good job. Just don't try to make it move any faster. Also, don't be surprised if you need to have a change or have some new glasses. There's something with your left eye, with the vision, that is altering. And I feel like I need to be aware. It's just subtle. It's not major. It's subtle. But if you notice that you're getting a tension headache around towards the left side of the head, be aware it might have to do with eye strain, especially if you're doing a lot of work on the computer.
Okay.
So just pay attention to things. What would you like to ask me, dear?
Well, you're right on. I'm in the process of kind of packing up and moving, but not for sure because we're still negotiating the sale of the house. And I wondered if you had any advice or insight for me on those negotiations, if there's anything you saw.
Well, what are you concerned with? Because it looks like to me things are pretty much laid out fairly clearly. What is your concern?
Well, there's some problems with the bathroom under the house, and we're not sure to what extent the damage is.
All right, now is this your home that you're selling?
Yes.
Or the one? Okay, so you've got some problems with the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what is the situation with the negotiation? Who is coming in? Are they wanting to buy the house?
Yes.
All right, they want to buy the house. Have you gotten a price estimate on what it would cost to repair this?
Kind of, but it's not for sure because they won't know until they can get in there and see what the extent of the damage is.
Great. All you need to do is have that done. And if you need to have 2 assessments done, independent of each other.
Do you think that would be a good idea?
Yes. I think you need to have 2 different assessments done so that when you have the information, you'll have it, you'll be able to give it to the purchaser. And then what you need to do, I think it's really a very easy deal. You need to say, look, it would be XYZ amount to fix it. We'll deduct it from the price, or you and yours say, we'll pay for it, we'll take care of this. I think it's easier if the people that are wanting to buy the house, if you give them the choice, they make the choice, and you just work with what that choice might be.
Oh, okay, so give them a choice.
I would say, this is it. If it's going to cost, let's say, $2,000 to fix this, if you don't want to be in the house any longer than necessary, and you say, all right, these are the options. These are the estimates that we have. These are two different opinions. This is what's going on here. So if you want to move into the house, if you want to buy the house at this time, and you want to, we will deduct XYZ dollars from our price.
Okay.
So that's covered.
Okay.
If you want us to fix it before you move in, then just know that we will take care of that cost. So one way or the other, take the responsibility. This is the home you've been living in. It's okay that you didn't know about it. Look at it as a blessing and say, okay, if we have to fix it, we fix it.
Okay.
And we make an adjustment accordingly, and vice versa.
Well, great.
I don't think it has to be a big deal. These people want to move in.
Oh, they do?
I think that they would be happy to. But give them the option. Ask them what they'd like to do. The worst case scenario is that they'd say, sorry, we just can't handle that. And say, well, you know what? That's fine. That's okay with me. We've got another buyer, and if that's something that, you know, you're uncomfortable with, that's okay. And release it and let it go. Don't worry about it.
Oh, good advice.
Don't worry about it, because it's, you know, it's not significant enough. You're not talking about $150,000 worth of repairs.
No.
You're talking about something that I think is like a slow leak.
Right.
And I think it has to do with age, and I think it has to do with materials that are not materials that are what we would consider up to par today.
Oh.
But that's okay, hon. Those things happen with a house.
Yeah. And so you think it can be worked through? Okay.
Oh, of course it can.
Okay.
But give them the option, and if they don't like it, then you don't want them to buy it anyway, because
right.
You're going to have nothing but a headache.
Right.
So don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're so
enjoy
welcome.
Las Vegas.
I am. You know, this sunshine, I'm going to carry it all the way home.
Well, I think you're sending it to us right now.
Well, you're a doll. Thanks so much, hon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we've got a little bit of time left, so I know we won't have time to take another caller, but I want and to give you some more information if you want to turn your idea into dollars. Remember what I said, you want to find out if anyone has a claim to your idea. You want to research the invention's value. And then if you find that nobody else has got anything like you've got, you want to look at a patent. And typically, a provisional patent application, which is good for 1 year, will cost about $3,000, including attorney's fees. Now, you need to know you can also file it on your own. If you have the time to do the research, it's not that expensive to file your own patent. You can do it, and they will tell you how to go about it. And for a utility patent, it's $15,000 to $20,000 on an average. That's the cost, which lasts for approximately 20 years from the filing date. And the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office does hold free seminars across the country for those of you who are inventors and, you know, those of you that have businesses where you want to safeguard your intellectual property. So this is the website you go to. You go to USPTO.gov/web/offices/com/IIP/index.htm. That's right. Long website. And also, be very thoughtful about these businesses that promote that they are going to help you with your invention and make sure everything is going to be okay. You want to check with your local Better Business Bureau or the Bureau of Consumer Affairs before signing on. There is a CEO, Lewis Foreman, that says that investors are being exploited at an alarming rate. So please don't be one of them. And I've known some people that they have been taken advantage of in that respect, so be wise. My goodness, we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting from Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll be here again tomorrow. And remember always, your light is your light. Turn it on. People need to see you and the gifts you bring to life. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book pack